Welcome back to Lead to Scale, a podcast about building businesses and scaling ideas. I am your host, Toby Daniels. On this week's episode, we have Josh Dean, who is the Chief Marketing Officer at Swell. Josh is an award-winning seasoned marketing executive with over 15 years experience across CPG, apparel, and direct-to-consumer at brands like Unilever, Chobani, and Tommy John. As one of the industry's smartest and most thoughtful marketers, Josh shares a ton of fascinating insight during our conversation, including what it takes to transition from a major CPG company like Unilever to the fast-paced and somewhat chaotic world of a brand startup. We also talked about why brand purpose should be about getting to the soul of a brand and not just a phrase we use to talk about brands who attach themselves to the latest sexy cause. Thank you again for listening to Leads to Scale. And if you like the show, please do take the opportunity to share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. And as always, a quick rating of the show and perhaps even a review goes a long way towards helping our rankings. If you have feedback or suggestions for who we should interview or how we could potentially improve the format of the show, please email us at leads2scale@socialmediaweek.org. Thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoy the conversation. On the podcast today, we're joined by Josh Dean, Chief Marketing Officer at Swell. Welcome, Josh.
Thanks, Toby. Great to be here.
So our tradition here on Lead to Scale is to start with a little bit of background on our guests. So I'll sort of frame things first, but then I'd like for you to give us the sort of potted history on Josh Dean. So most recently, you were the CMO of the underwear and apparel brand Tommy John, where you actually helped to relaunch the brand, and you had a ton of success in doing so. You are a professional in the world of marketing that has been recognized and awarded on a few different occasions. You were Ad Age's 40 Under 40 fairly recently. And prior to all of that, you spent some time at Unilever, where you worked on a number of different brands, Axe, Dove, etc., etc. And now, your current role, you've moved into another CMO position, this time obviously at Swell. So that's part of the story, but of course there are, I'm sure, there is a lot more kind of detail that we can kind of sort of dig into. So let's go all the way back, if you don't mind. Let's go all the way back to your time in sunny England and your sort of first foray into the world of marketing. Kind of, you know, start us at the beginning and bring us up to kind of the present day.
Yeah, well, I very nearly didn't become a marketer. I was almost about to become, or trying to become, a theatre director. So that's my first foray into the job world.
What was the path that you were on to become a theatre director?
I didn't study theatre. I was always an actor at school, and then at university at Nottingham, I got into directing and directed a lot of plays there. And then we took a play up to the Edinburgh Festival.
Wow.
Which was great. So and then I went into my first real job. Well, my first ever job was a pizza boy at Pizza Express, which you and I know well from
the
UK.
Yes, of course.
And then I went into a production company and worked on another famous UK sort of series called Faking It, that our US listeners may not know, but it was a great show in the UK, yeah. And Wife Swap and various other things that may or may not have made over here. And then, you know, I was really thinking about trying to get into theatre. I love theatre. But at the same time, I always had, you know, both my parents have, you know, been successful in the business world, and I've always kind of had, you know, both a creative side and an analytical side. So I also applied for roles on the graduate schemes, and one of them was Unilever. And then managed to get onto the graduate scheme. So yeah, that's how I started.
So when you first enter into the world of marketing, and you know, I remember I had a number of friends who went through kind of similar graduate programs, yeah. and they were always so great in terms of like fast tracking you in whatever kind of discipline that you were particularly in. But you know, you're joining Unilever, yeah. particularly at a time where perhaps like that world isn't particularly kind of sexy, but I'm sure it's very interesting to be working for a huge brand. What were your first impressions? Can you remember the kind of the yeah. impact that experience had on you at the time?
No, I get, and this is hopefully not showing too much of my age, but when I started Unilever, which was like 17 years ago, it kind of was still at the pinnacle of like the places to learn marketing. You know, you had Unilever, P&G, L'Oreal, in terms of CPG marketing. So, right. I mean, it was I felt tremendously excited to be joining somewhere like that. And yeah, as you know, and I'm sure you've had other guests on, it's a tremendous foundation for any marketer. Still right. is today. There's right. a great business, and they really understand some things that I still think are so powerful and truthful about marketing today. It's an art and a science. You really have to understand the consumer, the people that you serve, more so than ever before. Mm. They help you develop as a leader. You worked with, I was fortunate enough to work with some of the best marketers in the world who have since gone on to do incredible things. Mm. Still at Unilever, Steve mm. Miles at Dove, mm-hmm. Fernando Machado is now CMO at Burger King. You know, I worked indirectly or directly with those people. So. Not only did it teach you all the skills that I still use today, but it was probably the place where I learned, you know, the most about leadership in a way. You know,
right.
as incredible leaders, and because it's so big, you never feel that it's that big. You're always working on your own little project or brand, and you know you're moving every 2 years. So you know, I feel very fortunate to have sort of learned my skills there, and then have. Got the opportunity to work on like two of the most iconic brands that have always had purpose in them, have always found ways of a deep understanding of the consumers they're serving, and at the time, and this was a while ago, doing, you know, really kind of groundbreaking stuff. And even though
was your specialism in digital at that time, or were you getting the kind of broad sort of perspective of like all facets of marketing, you know, above, below, etc., etc.?
I think it was all facets of marketing, at least initially, including sort of, you know, retailer marketing. So you definitely sort of that you go broad to start. And then as I progressed, I moved more into innovation, brand development, strategy, you know, creative roles and digital, obviously towards the end, especially kind of, you know, with Axe, which at that time sort of led the way in terms of Unilever thinking and testing around digital.
Was Axe Links back then?
Yeah, Axe Links. Axe over here, Links in the
UK. Is it still Links in the UK?
It's still, yeah.
It is? I wonder why they've never, like, I guess it's such a legacy brand, you can't really change it, but yeah.
Links, you know, was the brand when you and I were growing up.
Well, dude, when you and I were walking around as teenagers, that's all we reeked of.
Yeah, I remember when I first started at Links, and I asked I went back through my own archives, and there was a picture of me lying on my bed as a 13-year-old with a can of Lynx Java.
Oh, yeah, Lynx Java.
And I was like, I've arrived.
Lynx Java was my jam, man. And that was like, you know, that was a big door opener for me in the world of like meeting and getting to know people of the opposite sex. It was, it was so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, I feel very nostalgic about that brand. But so how long were you at Unilever for?
Just over 11 years.
11 years,
yeah.
Wow.
So I did a variety of roles, UK roles, you know, what would be called regional roles, and global roles across sort of different personal care categories within Unilever, and then right. came over to the US with my now wife, and we launched the men's face care business in the US, and did some more sort of regional strategy brand development there too. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Unilever obviously afforded you a ton of different opportunities, one of which was to move to the States. Why did you decide to leave? And in particular, and if I look at your kind of resume, I think there are some really interesting decisions that you made in terms of kind of like your career path and your career development.
Yeah.
Why leave the sort of safety and security of Unilever and move into
the relatively sort of risky world of early stage direct to consumer brands?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and I also think that, you know, the key moments that anyone chooses to make a move from a career perspective are the ones that sort of tell you the most necessarily about, you know, who you are. And I think for me there were a couple of things going on. One is I'm a tremendously curious individual. I'm also very creative, and I also like to challenge myself. And I like to try wherever it's possible to be as good as human as I can possibly be. And it's hard to do all of those things at once, but that's what I try. So I think, you know, when it came to leaving Unilever, I'd learned so much in my 11 years there, but I was starting to feel that I wasn't learning, continuing to learn at the speed that I would like. And I also saw that the world kind of was moving, and Unilever is a great business. It's a legacy business. And so, you know, what is important to their shareholders and consumers is not necessarily something that's going to drive at the rate of change that I was looking to do. And I'd always been quite what you would now call entrepreneurial in Unilever. So I was looking for something that was a little more fast-paced, one where I could really sort of own more of the marketing mix, because obviously at Unilever everything is sort of very siloed and in a vast marketing-driven organization. And I think there was another side where, and you've met people from Unilever, and a lot of people at Unilever stay at Unilever for their whole career. Right. And you know, there was a semblance of like, I didn't want to, everyone was starting to call me Mr. Unilever.
Right.
And I think for me, there was, I felt like I wanted to try something different. I felt like I wanted to prove to myself and to others that I could do something outside.
Why is that? I'm curious, because like, it's interesting, because, and we'll get into it, because I think this, the brands that you've chosen to work with subsequently have such kind of like identities and are such strong brands, even regardless of like the category they're in or the stage that they're at. So, but why is that so important to you? Like, why is it so important to kind of like rid yourself of the shackles of being called like Mr. Unilever, but then subsequently attach yourself to like just really strong brands like subsequent to that?
I love to keep learning. I love to keep challenging myself. I love to work on great products. Like every place that I've worked, I've always started with like the product being amazing, you know, whether that's Unilever, Chobani, Tommy John, more recently Swell. So I'm hugely into products, and obviously I love services too. I've just never worked on them as a marketeer, but so like finding a product that I can, that really resonates to me as an individual, and I can see has a sort of product market fit, is like a key driver for me.
Was that something that you learned early on at Unilever, the idea that like it doesn't really matter how great the marketing kind of strategy or campaign is, if the product sucks, then it's just like never gonna work?
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in that. It always starts with the product. Anyone that says, oh, it's easy to make the product's the easy part, you know, the marketing's the hard part, is like, well, marketing's hard, but marketing's fun. Like making really great products, and now having worked with essentially three founders and hearing their incredible stories when they were sort of bootstrapping the business and making the product themselves, it's just amazing to see the sort of craft, care and attention and level of detail that they put into making a phenomenal product. Because, you know, if you don't have that, yes, can you sort of do marketing? Of course. And, you know, well, I'm sure we'll go and talk about marketing and how it's changed. But, you know, when I was at Unilever, obviously it was more heavily focused on above the line and marketing to people, let's say, whereas now, you know, marketing is about marketing for and with people, and is around empathy and service and really giving them something that it tangibly improves their quality of life, and I'm a huge believer in that. But yeah, I think it always comes back to the product. Also, for me personally, and I'm sure people will say, I find it incredibly hard to market a product that I don't believe in.
Right.
So like, that's my first litmus test.
It makes a ton of sense. I want to get back to my question, which I didn't really give you like an ample time to actually answer. But before I do, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. You and I are both fans of Seth Godin. Do you remember where you were or what job you had at the time when you first read Purple Cow?
I was on a Unilever course, and they have great traders there, and they just brought up Purple Cow and told like the summary of that book. And, then I became a massive fan of Seth, and I now live just outside of New York, and didn't realize this at the time, out of New York City in Westchester, and didn't realize at the time, but I happened to live in the same town as Seth. So, you know, we meet up for a coffee every now and again.
He's a great guy. He's a great guy. It's amazing. I love that aspect of your story. And also something that you and I both have in common, a general kind of love and respect and appreciation for Seth, because I think, you know, Purple Cow, I mean, so many of his books have impacted and affected me, but Purple Cow for me, particularly when I was embarking on a kind of a new sort of entrepreneurial endeavor, really stopped me in my tracks and helped me to kind of revisit something that I think is so core and fundamental in thinking about building something, creating something, whatever it is, whether it's a product or a service.
It
matters so much that that you're creating something great and something that's going to kind of impact people in a really meaningful way, and it doesn't matter necessarily what it is. What matters is the effect that it has and the extent to which it actually changes people's lives. Yeah. And I think that's so important. So to go back to my question, so you know, you jump from Unilever and you enter into a slightly riskier kind of world of D2C marketing. So what was the first thing you did coming off the back of the Unilever gig?
Well, there was interlude before jumping into Tommy John, which was at Chobani.
Of course.
And so that was riskier in the sense that I go from a huge public multinational, second biggest advertiser in the world, to Chobani, which was at the time, you know, 0 to 1 billion, I think, in 8 years. So it's had like startup as in, you know, almost Facebook-esque growth, but producing and creating a category around Greek yogurt. So for me, that was a big leap still, because I was going from a huge public company to a private company with a founder-driven. And that was amazing to, you know, because the sheer pace of change. I like to think in my time at Chobani, it was almost like a startup that happened to produce yogurt.
Right.
You know, it really was like working flat out all the time. I joined them as new CMO. He's since been there for 6 years, and we were like going crazy. We were doing a lot of stuff in a short space of time. So
right.
I did more in 6 months, I think, at Chobani than I did probably.
Well, look, man, this is what you asked for, right?
Yeah.
You were looking to sort of get out of Unilever into a more fast-paced environment. Like, did you feel actually as prepared as you thought you were, and did it meet your expectations?
No, I definitely didn't feel as prepared as I thought I was. I was like really pushing myself out of my comfort zone. You know, I had a senior role. I was head of brand communications at Chobani, and you know, wanted to prove myself, but also was surrounded with a great team. I brought on some incredible people who I'm really close with to today, and we were a really tight-knit team, and we were working with Droga at the time, and it was great, and we kind of did a ton of stuff in a short space of time. So I think that for me was a lesson of, like, you know, I took the leap. I didn't feel like fully prepared, and I was, comfortably uncomfortable, and it just pushed me in all the right ways. And some, you know, I made mistakes, as everyone does along the way. I learned a lot about how to lead, and maybe how not to lead. I grew as a leader a lot there. You know, and there were some challenges that we faced and got through. So it was a great time. We really kind of put Chobani on the map in terms of, like, you know, driving brand awareness in the US. We did a Super Bowl campaign, Olympics, a new product launch, revised the architecture, you know,
right.
A lot of things. So it was so different from Unilever, though. You know, the only thing that was probably the same was it was CPG. It's time in foods, but you know, it was my first taste of a sort of a mission-driven business, a founder that was incredibly inspiring. You know, what Hamdi had done upstate and turning the town around was just amazing, and he's, you know, continues to do amazing stuff around that. So great experience and great kind of first role outside of the
big. So what, you know. It's. I'm always really interested in this question, because you get so many different responses. But when did you know it was the right time to leave and jump into the next adventure?
I even at Unilever, I started to see, you know, D2C really kind of take off. At that time, it was, you know, Warby Parker, Dollar Shave Club, Harry's. So I'd been having conversations with, at that time, VCs about kind of coming on board and helping either them or other brands. So for me, what I also, and this goes back to one of your other questions, which is kind of why you know, why I wanted to kind of leave Unilever and I guess the world of CPG was I also didn't want to be branded as a CPG marketer.
Right.
I you know, D2C was sort of taking off and I saw an opportunity for me to build on my skill set. You know, I'd never done growth marketing, never really understood how that building a business with so much data, a digitally native brand, and right. how to do that online. So when the opportunity came to kind of run brand at Tommy John, that was fantastic because here was a, it had product market fit, it's an incredible product. I know you are a fan. you know, Tom, the founder, came to me and said, look, I've got a great product. I'm currently sold out because he'd just been on Howard Stern and like
right.
Howard Stern and Colin Radio Show talked about how this underwear changed his life. His balls have never felt so good and yeah. everyone needs to try it. But he's like, I'm not a marketer. I don't have marketing. Will you help me build this brand? And so then it was that was a great opportunity to essentially take everything that I'd learned at Unilever on building brands and connecting, you know, finding purpose for brands and resonate and really understanding your consumer and helping Tommy John define what that was for them with a great product and then kind of continue to grow and learn about a very fast growing DC business and everything that is required to be, you know, a holistic marketeer and a holistic CMO.
Right. I mean, it's really interesting when you go back. I mean, I guess Chobani wasn't necessarily D2C, so Tommy John was your first kind of
yeah.
foray into that kind of yeah. world. What year was this?
2014.
Right. So 2014 is I think, you know, it's the point at which D2C is even becoming kind of like a term.
Yeah.
But also growth marketing, you know,
yeah.
didn't really exist in the kind of
yeah.
the broader marketing lexicon until that time. Describe even back then, like, your understanding, interpretation of what growth marketing was. And why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because I think that the marketing industry as a whole goes through cycles of being obsessed about the new shiny thing.
Right.
And you and I are old enough to remember way back when the new thing was digital or the new thing was integrated 360 marketing.
Yeah.
And I'm laughing because I think what happens, and I think this is somewhat unfortunate because it keeps happening, is that you get sort of the marketers love new buzzy things. Everyone's trying to chase the new thing.
Mm.
And you get new themes emerging, of which social media, another example too. And What I think happens is you have, you know, senior marketing leaders going, oh, we have a gap, or I have a gap, and understanding and knowledge in this space, and therefore all I need is this, and this is the thing that we all have to focus on, and it's this above everything else. So I've seen that now happen with integrated marketing, 360 marketing, social media, and growth marketing.
Right.
And, you know, I get it, and it makes sense, because you know, these things happen relatively quickly and there's a skill deficit that we need to try and fill. But I think what we need to be more mindful about now is this sort of, you know, sometimes bolt fast on everything just becomes maniacally focused on this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, performance marketing, growth marketing back then was, you know, essentially, and still is, you know, looking at that, they are in many ways direct response channels. Direct response as a form of marketing has existed way before performance marketing, direct mail, which is now making a comeback, or catalogs, etc. So it is a way of being able to attribute, to find customers, to acquire customers, and to have clear attribution on how you can acquire them. And to use that data, whether that in the old days was analog, and then nowadays is digital, to be able to kind of acquire customers and build that customer base. It's incredibly powerful. And any brand, any digitally native brand, of course, today needs that. But I always caution people against thinking that the solution to everything is growth marketing.
Right.
You know, also, and you and I know fantastic growth marketeers. They are,
wizards,
very different profile from sort of classical brand marketers.
Right.
And I think this is often the challenge for CMOs, because now, you know, roll forward, and you know, D2C as a term and an industry has existed now for sort of 10 plus years, and is a huge channel for any brand. And you know, even if you just look in the last, I would say, 3 years, and the shift that's happened between everyone saying it's all about D2C and nothing else, and now people say, well, actually, it's about omnichannel, and D2C is a key part of that as a brand. And then you start to say, well, as a marketeer, as a CMO, what skills can you bring? What deep knowledge do you need to be able to address the you know, problems and challenges that you face sort of from a media landscape, but also how do you think about structuring a team to be able to kind of, you know, provide that North Star, provide that vision, provide leadership, and get sort of experts in those various fields to be able to kind of drive that too? Because now more than ever before, as a CMO, you're in many ways sort of the CEO of a marketing organization that has really clear skill sets underneath, and you of course will come from one of those areas, but you know, you have to be a you know, I believe that you have to be, you know, immensely curious, you have to keep your finger on the pulse, you have to be able to move at the speed of popular culture, you have to want to learn about the new things that are coming up, because you know, 4 or 5 years ago it was all about growth marketing. Now, you know, it's about voice. Now it's about other areas that are really important that you are not something that you've necessarily, you know, learned on at your time at Unilever.
Well, you know, you just touched on a whole bunch of like fundamentals of marketing that, like, you know, are universal. It's always been the case in terms of them, in terms of representing kind of the principles of marketing. In a way, it's so easy to lose sight of that or become distracted by it. But it seems to me, first and foremost, because of your foundational experience at Unilever and what that taught you, and because you are a student of marketing, and I think also because you subscribe, much like I do, to the Seth Godin kind of like way of thinking about marketing, which is less about the shiny object and less about the faddishness of whatever is kind of cool and sexy today, and less about chasing metrics that can oftentimes tell a very misleading story. And instead it's about how are we moving people, changing people, how are we inviting people on a journey that's fundamentally gonna kind of like enrich them or solve a problem for them or whatever. But has it been though hard for you as a marketer, particularly as you have moved into these different roles and working for and representing these different brands, to stay focused on that idea and not become kind of overly distracted by the shiny objects?
Yeah, it has been hard. I think it's I'm always a big believer in, like, you know, you show up as the best version of yourself every day and as a human, and I wear my heart on my sleeve and I'm very transparent about what I'm strong at, and I'm also transparent about where I would need support on. And so that is something that I think has been really a life lesson for me. You know, I would never want to go in and say that I could do something that I couldn't. And also at the same time push myself to learn new things. But it has been hard because when you're having conversations with people, and I think this is advice for anyone that's kind of listening and thinking maybe about another role or where they want to focus on, like, everyone should first understand what they're strong at and double down on that, and where they are, where they need to develop, understand why they need to develop in that area. And I think it's different, you know, as leaders, we all need to develop. As being more empathetic, we need to develop. But in your skill set and what you love every day, what doesn't feel like work and you enjoy, that's where you'll find the most sort of enrichment in life and in work. So I'm a huge believer in that. And I think that it's sometimes, to your point, you know, the new shiny thing is, you know, everyone's looking for a performance marketer. Well, we need, this is another classic one which comes out, and it's just like, we need a performance leaning CMO. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? It's like, well, do you want someone that's just about performance?
Right.
Because in my world, when I talk about CMOs, I don't believe that a CMO should just be about being a performance marketer. I don't believe that like, you can be a CMO if all you do is performance marketing.
Right.
Don't get me wrong, I think performance marketing is extremely important, but it's not, for me, you know, back to what Seth Godin, it's like, you know, if you really want to be able to lead a brand, you need to be able to define why that brand exists, who the people are that you're serving, how you're going to make a difference in their lives, what's your purpose, what's your North Star, and how you can inspire, you know, your team, your employees, the consumers on that journey along with you. Mm. And that requires you to be able to take a broader view and use all the, you know, the what you've learned across the years and understanding, you know, in many ways. And, you know, I've started talking about this more and more, but you know, the humanity behind the brand, you know, I think everyone's talking about brand purpose now. It's really important why a brand exists, Simon Sinek, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. But for me, it's not enough just to say why a brand exists, because if you just talk about why brands exist, it could become quite esoteric. You know, mm. It's like, we exist to, you know, inspire people to be mindful about how they exist every day.
Right.
And it's a great thing to have. But I think if you're thinking about a brand, we need to move, you know, from, you know, what I would call brand purpose to what is called brand purpose to what I would call brand soul. And what I mean by that is, how do we talk about the humanity of the brand? How do we talk about how brands make you feel, how they show up in everyday life?
I think there's something so interesting in that. I'm not going to disagree with calling it brand soul or brand purpose. And I kind of agree with you. I think that the purpose is the wrong word. But what seems to me more important is not necessarily even what you stand for as a kind of like a way of like looking back at your sort of heritage and where you came from or what your core mission was, but much more about what you stand for in the context of the actions you take today. Like, what role do you play in society?
Yeah.
What impact do you have on people's lives through the products and services that you provide, or in terms of being a citizen, a participating, functioning, and positive member of society? That's where it becomes kind of, I think, a much more interesting. And I do want to come back to it, because I think obviously your current role at Swell,
this is a
lot of, I'm sure, what drew you to the to the brand in the first place.
Yeah.
But I want to go back just to Tommy for a second. And by the way, thank you for mentioning that. I'm a big fan, because I really am. And I was a customer very, very early on. And it is a product that has a transformative impact on your nether regions. The thing I talk about actually in terms of Tommy John is the fact that you can, I wear the long johns, the ones that go all the way down to your knees. And the thing that I love about it, and I talk about this a lot, is the fact that, like, you know, they keep you cool in the winter. Sorry, they keep you warm in the winter and cool in the summer. And no other underwear could ever achieve that. So,
You should just caveat that they didn't pay you to do, you know, a sponsored post in your podcast.
No, I'm regularly talk about and promote brands in conversation and publicly on social media, and I can confidently say I've never received a single dollar in return. That is not in any way to suggest that I'm against that idea. So when you look back on the Tommy John experience, what are you most proud of?
You know, when I arrived at Tommy John, I was the first marketeer. So I built the marketing team, the function, and I helped build the brand. And, you know, to be able to kind of put that brand on the map and do it in a way that was so different from, you know, every other underwear brand out there was, you know, one of my career highlights for sure. Like, when we relaunched the brand, it was all around, you know, based on this insight that men didn't realize that, when they wore bad underwear, they were essentially adjusting themselves in public. And we launched a whole campaign around the big adjustment that went pretty viral very quickly, which was essentially just showing the problem that guys had in a pretty explicit form about how they would adjust themselves every day. And I think that, you know, what I'm proud about from that campaign was that it absolutely was a universal insight. We executed it in a really good way with, you know, Preacher, who were great partners and great people down in Austin. And, you know, we also did something completely different in the category. And, you know, I always look at that and feel very proud about that because it was very true to, you know, why the brand existed, why Tom founded it. It was a problem-solution brand. We'd always talked about sort of wedgies and how that wasn't cool for guys, but we did it in a premium elevated way. And then, you know, from then on, once we laid the foundations for the brand, you know, went from strength to strength, from underwear to apparel to retail to the launch of women's. And because it had such a clear, you know, brand purpose around making men and women of substance feel comfortable to be their true selves, everything else just fell into place. And I think for me, that's something that I, you know, whenever I start anywhere, especially as a, you know, a CMO of a smaller organization that maybe hasn't had either marketing or consistent marketing discipline around that, you know, for me, that's one of the fundamental things that you need to really understand and set up quickly based off of, like, you know, research and doing a good assessment of where the brand could be.
Now, I know you had the opportunity to take a little bit of time between Tommy John and your current role at Swell. And I'm always interested in those periods because, you know, it's oftentimes a period of self-reflection in terms of thinking about what you want to do next. And I always encourage people as much as possible, if they can, to take that time because it's so hard to make decisions when you're in the thick of things. And it's oftentimes much easier to create the space and to have the time to really sort of map out like what it is that you want to do next and of course why. So talk about that period and what you were thinking about, where your head was at, and then obviously, you know, why you decided to join Swell.
Yeah, and I fully agree with that too. I think that, you know, it was when I left Tommy John, it was the first time that I actually had given myself time to take some time off and recharge my batteries, spend time with my family. You know, I've got two young daughters and that was amazing over the summer, and just take a step back and realize what was important to me. And, you know, you don't realize until you do it how valuable that is. I'm a huge advocate in making sure that everyone takes care of themselves. And I think sometimes, especially, you know, well, in any job that you love and you kind of commit to with everything, it's, you don't realize how much of a drain it can be until you sort of take a step back and recharge. So yes, fully agree with that. Anyone, if you have the opportunity to do it, you should absolutely do it. And you should also then take a step back and go, you know, I did an exercise where I said, I looked forward, and this is a sort of a well-known coaching sort of exercise, and said, like, where do I see myself? Like, plot what I would love my future self to be, and write it down, and write almost a letter to yourself and say, this is who I will be. And I did that. And what I realized as part of that was, you know, I'd spent almost 20 years working on incredible products that I really loved, and connecting to consumers and doing, you know, great campaigns or great innovations, etc. But what I also realized is, like, all of those jobs that I was doing up until that point were about selling more, more, more. Like, I was on the sort of consumption and trying to get people to buy more and more and more. And I think I just had, you know, obviously given the, you know, trying times we were all in and so much uncertainty and around the world overall, and having two young daughters, I think I had a moment where I was like, I want to try and find a role where I genuinely feel that I can give back, and that instead of it being all about sort of quantity of stuff, it was about quality of life and how do I use that lens to kind of help guide me for future roles. So, you know, I think that was a really, really important thing that I learned during that time off. And, you know, when the opportunity came as well, a mission-driven company, an incredible female founder on a mission to reduce the world of single-use plastic at a time where, you know, everyone from Greta Thunberg to all of the climate crisis that we're seeing, really felt like an opportunity to come and, you know, make a meaningful impact on the world and on people's lives every day, and how I could take, you know, already a great product and, you know, help really define what that brand could be moving forward. So I wouldn't have been able to have almost taken that role or gone to that role had I not done that exercise for myself. So
we interrupt this week's episode of Leads to Scale to share an update in regards to our forthcoming conference in London, the 10th annual edition of Social Media Week London, Europe's premier conference for media and marketing professionals, is taking place at the QE2 Conference Center in Westminster between October 31st and November 1st. This year's event will continue the 2019 global theme Stories with Great Influence Comes Great Responsibility, a conversation that will explore how social media has become the most influential story platform in the world that has the power to both unite and divide us. Check out our first wave of speakers and secure your pass by visiting socialmediaweek.org/London. And don't forget to use the code LEADS2SCALE at the checkout to save an additional 10% off your pass. All right, let's get back to the show.
I've sort of realized in this conversation the ways in which you've sort of infiltrated my life. And you know, look, I don't think it was deliberate, but... yes, you know, growing up as a teenager, I was a big Axe user, a Unilever product. In the UK, it's called Lynx. This morning, I showered with Dove. I had a Chobani yogurt for breakfast. I'm wearing Tommy John underwear, and we have numerous Swell bottles in front of us at the moment, some of which you very generously brought in and gifted, but I'm a huge fan of the brand and have plenty of Swells in my life. So don't know how it's happened. You figured out how to...
stalking me, basically.
Yeah. I'm either stalking you or...
I'm flattered. Thank
influence
you.
And manipulate me in some way, but you're obviously doing such a good job. But you know, Swell is an interesting company because, again, it's a product in an already very competitive category that has differentiated itself in a number of different ways, partly in terms of what it stands for and why it exists, but also partly because it's just a really fucking great product.
Yeah.
So for our listeners who don't even know what Swell is, which is probably not very many of them, but describe the business, what it stands for, what's at the heart of the Swell mission, and then talk a little bit about the products.
That's a great question, because we've just sort of evolved since I've been here, our brand purpose. And, you know, at the heart of that for Swell, it's to bring style, innovation, and joy to sustainable living. And we currently sell incredible water bottles, reusable stainless steel, triple insulated water bottles that keep drinks extremely cold, whether that be water or potentially alcoholic beverages, and coffee and tea or hot beverages very hot. And the mission of the business that, and the founder, Sarah Kaus, when she launched was she wants to rid the world of single-use plastic bottles, and we're now of single-use plastic, period. So that's Swell in a nutshell. I think the other thing about Swell is when it launched 9 years ago, it really did actually create a new category. Obviously, water bottles, reusable water bottles exist, and I'm sure a lot of people have a Nalgene or Thermos. But where Sarah was incredibly smart is that she created this new category around sort of what we call a hydration fashion accessory. So she made a water bottle, which until that point was a canteen that you would find in an outdoor store, into a desirable accessory that you would want to have on your desk every day at work or at home, and these beautiful designs. It was, you know, the must-have item, still is in many ways. So they had tremendous success because it was the early product market fit and really created the category. And at that time, there wasn't really much competition. And, you know, they grew through incredible word of mouth, PR, social, organic, you know, through associating themselves with great partnerships and doing, you know, really closely associated with fashion. And, you know, obviously since then, that it has become a more crowded and competitive space. And, you know, they grew to $100 million without really doing any marketing. Right. And now, you know, it is more competitive. And, you know, I think Sarah brought me on because she realizes that we need to do more to tell the brand story. You know, what people often know Swell because they love the bottle, they love the designs, and it doesn't leave their side. But I think people probably don't know everything that we've done, whether that be kind of the work that we've done with UNICEF and providing fresh water in Madagascar, to last year, you know, Swell partnered with the mayor's office and New York and provided 320,000 bottles to all the high school kids in New York City, because what we realized was what is amazing and what's happening at the moment is that with the, you know, Gen Z in particular are sort of driving the story and momentum around tackling the climate crisis, with Greta Thunberg as being kind of the pinnacle of that. So when we had the opportunity to partner with the mayor's office and provide all of these bottles to all of the high school students in New York in the five boroughs, not only did we displace over 50 million bottles of single-use plastic, because, you know, on average every consumer uses 167 a year, but what was even more inspiring is that we would get stories from the parents of these kids who come home and said, I don't know what's happened to my kid, but they're refusing to let me buy, you know, plastic bottles, and telling me that I need to be using Swell or other reusable bottles. And to have that, to be a brand that has that impact,
right,
was everything to me, because that's where you can make meaningful change on people's lives and show that, you know, small individual actions can make a big difference. That's not advertising, that's just being able to provide something that people need and tell a story around that that kind of can change how they think about life. So
you have so much to work with Swell in terms of the brand and the story, but at the same time I can imagine it's like, it's hard, it's really challenging, particularly in terms of just knowing where to start. You know, obviously you have the experience, you've done this many times before, but I think it would be really interesting for our listeners if you unpacked a little bit the 6 months or so that you've been at the company and the steps that you've taken to kind of like implement the strategy and the changes that you've been talking about.
Yeah, it is hard. I would say it's even harder when you're at a startup, where there isn't necessarily the process in place.
You still call them a startup?
Well, upstart. Yeah. You know, I don't know what the cutoff is. It's a, you know, it's a self-funded business. It's small and mighty. So, you know, it obviously has had people. It's a bigger team than when I joined at Tommy John, but they still hadn't. They needed to do sort of redo the positioning work and understand where the brand could go. But what you don't get when you become CMO of a company that size is the time and space to, you know, go on a listening tour, you know, the process of really kind of going back to understand where the brand was. You have to do that, but you can't just do that. Mm-hmm. You have to run the business. You have, right, like, you know, I'm responsible for DTC. We have to be thinking about growth, short, medium, and long term. So the brand, the strategy work, and we did a big amount, we did a lot of research, we spoke to existing employees and customers, and I listened a lot which you need to do when you start. But I also recognized that we had to deliver this year, and there's initiatives that we had to kick off, and the brand had just been quiet for so long that we had to get out there again. So whilst I was doing the sort of strategic foundational work, I was also working on, right, what are we doing this summer for hydration? We just launched a Summer of Swell campaign that many people probably saw in the city, which was just getting out there again and saying, hey, it's hot, hydrate with Swell, keep cool. And people were just like, oh, Swell's back, you know. So I think it's important to have those like early wins. And also, you know, obviously spend a lot of time with my team, get to know them, really understand where the opportunities are to help them grow and where we need to kind of bring in, supplement the team with more support. So, yeah, I think it's a combination of, you know, research, strategy, getting people inspired by the new purpose and the North Star brand and buy-in around that. And momentum on that, at the same time, those quick wins and actions that you need to want to show that you can deliver to continue to drive the growth and the momentum of the business so that you've got both things working, you know, in parallel. And sometimes that means that you're going too, you feel that you're going too quick. Right. But at the same time, you don't have the luxury, especially in an upstart startup where things need to happen, just to sort of, focus purely on the strategic side.
So I'm going to move away from Swell and that sort of part of the conversation, because I want to get your thoughts on where we are today sort of as an industry. And you know, you and I have had this conversation a lot, which I really appreciate. And I think you have some really interesting sort of perspectives and a point of view. But I want to go back to something you said earlier, because you were talking about kind of these, the moments in time where marketers kind of, you know, jump on to kind of what feels like the next thing, whether it's a shiny object as a tool or technology, or whether it's a new process or methodology. And you sort of lumped social media in with like integrated 360 or growth marketing or performance marketing. You sort of like mentioned social media in that sort of same sentence. And you know, I'm not in any way suggesting that you're wrong to do so, but I am interested to get your thoughts on where we are at as an industry to get today and the role of where social media fits into the kind of the broader marketing landscape. What you know, how do you look at it, or how do you think about it, and where do you think it's sort of heading?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know if I meant to bucket it into those groups, but I think there is always a risk. There's always a reason why something gets a powerful name, and sometimes that name can be helpful, and sometimes it I think can sort of often become somewhat meaningless. And what I mean by that is, obviously, social media is all around us. We live in a society where you've never been more connected, where everyone has a megaphone at their disposal from the beginning for all 24/7. So that's the reality of the world in which we live. I think the other huge societal change which social media has brought, which is, I think, an incredibly positive change, is, you know, it's brought power back to the people. You know, we're in a time where there's never been less trust in large institutions and organizations and governments, and, you know, people power and the ability for that to shift mindset and, you know, people to come together in tribes is all incredibly powerful and amazing, of how, you know, we have a tool that can unite or sometimes divide society. So I think, you know, obviously, you know, social media is now, or, you know, the world in which we live in every day. That being said, there are, of course, it can be used to positive effect, and of course it can be used to negative effect, and we all know that, and you've talked about that a lot. I think, you know, when I think about brands and social media, you know, and you know this, you've talked about this a lot, how, you know, brands have become beholden in some ways to social media. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's examples in different ways of how that shows up, but going back to growth marketing, you know, obviously every growth marketer looks at paid social, looks at Google, looks at Instagram, looks at Snapchat. But more recently, people have started to say, well, you know, because of the algorithmic changes, because of the fact that it's become more crowded, it's essentially almost like rent. You know, you are renting the space to be able to talk to consumers. And I don't think that was ever the intention of social media, in a marketing sense, you know, but in the pay to play world that often we as marketers think about getting our message across, or at least paying to get our message across, that's where I think we are in that sense. So I think it's something that is evolving. It's something that is such an important tool, because the other thing that has changed is that, you know, at a high level holistically for marketing, is it used to be, you know, we were spreading one message out to the masses in a channel that we own. And obviously now we can have one amazing one-on-one interactions and conversations through social media with individual consumers. That is so powerful and so amazing, because if we go back to what we're saying about marketing being making positive change happen to the people that we serve, and how you can surprise and delight individuals on a one-on-one level at scale, would not have been able to happen had it not been for, you know, the tools that we have.
Why do you think it's so hard for people and brands and marketers to just reconcile this idea that it's okay for something to be simultaneously good and bad? And I mean that in the context of like social media, right? In that it's messy and it's constantly changing and evolving. It can be used for good, it can be used for bad. There have been opportunities for brands to achieve a level of engagement with consumers organically, and now it's much harder to do so, and it will evolve into something else in the future. But why is it so hard for people to just accept that that's probably always been the reality, even though it's a different one? And, you know, just sort of almost make peace with that.
That's a great question. Stop asking me these tough questions. I don't know. This is just my perspective. I think most marketers I meet are tremendously optimistic people. Mm-hmm. And they always like to think that what they're working on comes from a place of positive intent. So I think that people struggle when there's something that has all the positive intent in the world, and then they see an instant reaction, which is, you know, very negative. And I think that it's hard for anyone to see that. So I think that that's what social media has done. Is, you're right, I think it's always existed. There's always something that it can, you know, and we don't have time to dwell on this now, but like, you know, being a brand today, or at any time, you have to have a point of view on the world. And if you have a point of view, that's going to please some people and displease other people. But I think what social media has done is, because it's so instantaneous, the reaction, and so quick to pick up. In the past, there probably would have been that same reaction, but that's on an individual level. Yep. But now with social media, that can become exemplified and accelerated at such a speed that you're seeing that reaction. And then when you're faced with that, as someone that's put their heart and soul into whatever they're creating, I think that's why marketers find it really hard. But at the same time, what I would say is, you know, you can't be everything to everyone, to all people. That's never been the case and absolutely is not the case now. You have to be clear on who you are as a brand, why you exist, who are the people you're serving. And you have to stand by and believe in what you're saying, and be transparent about that and be consistent about that. Mm. And if you do those things and you think about the long term and you feel good about the impact that you're making on the people that you're serving, I believe that you'll end up in the right place.
Well, I think that's a great way to sort of segue to my last question, which is that what I'm most interested in you doing to kind of like wrap up is to sort of provide some salient wisdom to our audience. But I'll preface it by saying that when you go back to the Unilever days, your decision to move out of that into a more of a risky kind of space, you joined Chobani, then it was Tommy John, and now Swell. What do you think has been consistent over that time? And what one piece of advice would you share with our audience in regards to being the most agile of marketers?
Trust your gut. That's always been something that has served me well. And I don't mean to say only trust your gut, but really kind of listen and get a sense of how you feel. Understand your strengths and double down on those. And be clear on what you want to bring every day to work, whether you are starting off your career, being a manager, director, VP, a leader, a CMO, CEO, and try as best as you can to stay true to that and be hard on yourself on those things, because then that is what makes you you and people know you for being that. And back to your earlier point, which I totally agree with, it's you can't just talk the talk, you have to walk the walk and do it time and time again consistently. And that's hard, but if you do that, then you should feel pretty good with what you leave behind.
Well, Josh, thank you. I appreciate you. We've only known each other, I think, a little more than a year, and getting to know you, I admire your perspective, your view on the world. Clearly, you've done an extraordinary job of infiltrating my life and my family's world with the various different products that you've represented over the years. But much more importantly, I think that you're a marketer with a true sense of purpose, a marketer that has a connection to really what matters in the world and how you can use marketing as a way of being able to impact people's lives in a positive way. So I very much appreciate that. And I also appreciate you taking the time to join us on the podcast. So thank you.
Thanks, Toby. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to Leads to Scale, a podcast from Social Media Week. Leads to Scale is edited and produced by Al Manarino. For the latest news and insights, or to learn more information about how to get involved with future Social Media Week events, please visit socialmediaweek.org.